Here on the podcast, we have been sharing my oldest son's story, and we have seen him spiral downward while he was still in high school and in our home. On today's episode, we continue with the interview, and we look at his transition into college. So let's go ahead and get started. Have you ever felt that we are losing young people to the world around them, and that they have already chosen to walk away from Jesus without even knowing him? And did you know that all young people are at risk for something? That's why I want to welcome you to the Jesus Is My Hashtag podcast, where positive youth development and youth ministry intersect. I'm your host, Deb Schroeder. Join me weekly for encouragement, resources, and strategies to assist you in helping young people make Jesus their hashtag. Welcome back to the Jesus Is My Hashtag podcast and our continued interview with my son, Jared. Now, if you've missed any of our interviews so far, please go back and listen to episodes 26 through 29. It's both honest and vulnerable. My desire is that it offers encouragement and hope to you. At the end of episode 29, I shared that my husband and I knew in our hearts that Jared really wasn't ready to make that transition to college. We had encouraged him to take a semester or even a year off and work and figure out what he wanted to do and what he wanted to study in school. Unfortunately, his stubbornness didn't allow him to think clearly about this. In the end, we decided to go ahead and let him try. Things were not changing with him in our home. We hoped that this shift to this independence that he was so desperately craving and also being around other students who were focused on their academics would help him. Let's pick up right there.
I joined a fraternity in there, and right away, it was not good because for those first couple weeks, I think I was going to a lot of my classes. And then I started making decisions where I would not go to class, and my grades really suffered. Compared to what they eventually would be, they weren't terrible at that point. But
they were bad.
They were, but compared to, you know, what you and I know what would happen after that, they weren't that bad. It was bad. It was even worse than high school because now I was on my own and I could make those decisions of what I wanted to do myself. So it was, again, every weekend going out drinking. It was pretty much drinking. There were drugs that would be kind of sprinkled in there, but it was mainly drinking. My depression was building and building and building at this point, and I was drowning it with alcohol because at least for that little bit of time, I wasn't thinking about that. You know, I'd get drunk, not think about it for a couple hours, wake up the next morning hungover, and then feel crap about myself and just look at, and I hated looking myself in the mirror because I'm like, is this what you're becoming? But at that point I wasn't, you know, there was shame there. And I was starting to become aware of that. I think really when I started to become aware of that was when I ended up having to repledge. If you don't know, when you're your first semester in a fraternity, you're what's considered a pledge, and then you go through your pledging semester, and then you become an active in the fraternity. Well, I had, I think at that time we had like a three strike thing in the fraternity, and I had gone through all three strikes just off of, you know, partying, not showing up to stuff when I should have, and then, you know, even just bad decisions. And I had the repledge, and I remember coupled that, and I got kicked out of the house.
So then at that point, I remember Jared having to call us in December. We were driving home from my parents' house, and Tom and I and Mal and Jake, and Jared's calling us and telling us he's evicted. And so then he has to move out of his fraternity. They're going to let him pledge again. But he asked, and so we move him into the dorms, and like, right, every parent instinct, here we go again, or, you know, and then at the same point, you're like, this is it. This is rock bottom. He's hit rock bottom now, right? How, you know, how, how crazy is it that at some point as a parent, you were praying for rock bottom for your kid? You were praying that they hit rock bottom and that this is the rock bottom because you don't think it can go any lower.
And I think, yeah, I think at that point, that's kind of all you could do. Cause I was not, you know, I was not responsive to anything that you were saying. I still was wanting to do it my own way, but I was burying myself. I was digging that hole deeper and deeper. And I remember at the end of that semester, we went to the doctor. I ended up going on my depression meds. But I want to go back to the first semester because as embarrassing and shameful as having to call you and tell you that not only were my grades bad, but also I was evicted from my fraternity. Something that even to this day, not that I haven't forgiven myself for it, but just that still bugs me was that same semester, your dad passed away and I was skipping so many classes that in one specific class, I could only skip three times or I could only miss three classes that semester. And I could, and then the fourth one, if I missed a fourth, I'd get an F on that semester. And I think this was about halfway through the semester when I think grandpa died about halfway through that semester. And even at that point, I had used up, you know, all three absences in that class. And I remember there was the funeral for grandpa that weekend or that day. I remember having to tell you, Mom, I can't come to the funeral because if I miss one more class, I'm going to get an F in this class. Out of everything that happened, that is the thing that sticks with me the most that I don't know, it's going to take a lot longer to heal and get over because you and your dad were so, so close and having to miss, and even to me, I was close with grandpa. And I remember before that semester, I took him for a ride in my truck that I had at that point. And I remember, and this also built on the shame I was feeling just for the listeners, my grandpa for me is personally the greatest person I have ever met. He's just no one ever, I think, will ever rival how great of a man he was. He put God above everyone. And then second to that was his family. He put his family over everything else. And I'm sure you'll probably at some point you'll talk about, you know, if you haven't already, what you went through growing up, but that man was so strong. He's very inspirational to me. And at that point we were driving around with my grandpa and he told me, you know, this was a few months, I think, before he passed away. And he was telling me, you know, don't get drunk. And yeah, there were some more expletives in there. he was like, you know, don't go to college, but go for your education. Don't get drunk. Don't party it away, basically. Don't get trapped and lost with all the other things you could be doing rather than studying. Like, he wanted me to go and get my education. And then that semester when he passed away and I couldn't go to the funeral, that's been something that that ate me alive for a long time because, you know, I really wanted to make him proud. And the fact that I wasn't was also that did not help matters at all. That really brought a lot more shame to me. Nowadays, you know, after I've gone all through this, the stuff I went through, I always, in the back of my mind, with everything, you know, I do, I try to think, you know, what would make grandpa proud? And then if this is something that would make him proud, if this is something that he would do, then I do it. And if this is something he would not approve of, and that would take me off the path that you and dad want for me, but what he wanted for me as well, I don't do that. And so he's still a really influential person to me, because I'm not usually super emotional, but he talking about him gets me really emotional, because I pray that I can be, you know, half as good of a man as he was.
So here's what I need to say. First, your grandpa would be really proud of you that you have made the changes and you have turned around. And I'll be honest, and this is hard to say to you because I don't want you to hurt. I remember such anger, and I held that anger for so long at Jared for a good 6 to 8 months. I held that anger that he wasn't at my dad's funeral. And maybe it was even for a full year. It just hurt so much because to me that it didn't make sense. And at the same time, I didn't really know the depths of the depression that Jared was struggling with. It really wasn't. We just kind of were having an inkling, and we knew the drinking and that and the partying, but really that's when the depression was really starting to surface. And we didn't really know at that point how deep it was. But I remember at one point thinking that, you know, my dad would not want me to be angry. He forgave. He was such a model of forgiving others, and that I had to let that go, because the longer I held on to that, that would keep a divide between Jared and I. And I didn't want that.
Did you ever tell him what I was going through?
He knew. He knew you were struggling academically and partying, and he knew you were struggling with some depression. And, you know, your grandpa, he has quite a little past of his own in terms right. of being a drinker, didn't do drugs, but quite the little partying drinker. There were 6 boys and 1 sister in their family, and grandpa was a hellion, and he raised some rough times, and it took God coming into his life a little more clearly through a very, very forceful sister and brother-in-law who helped to straighten him out. And when he was ready for God to work in him to make those changes, he did. And I think that was some of my hope in that, knowing that he'd struggled. Some of that hope to know what kind of a godly man of faith he became. I always had hope for that for you, Jared. And that really kind of grew out of your grandpa.
Yeah.
I want to pause the interview briefly and talk a little bit about all the emotions I was experiencing, especially the anger. As I look back at the anger that I had with Jared for not being able to be at my dad's funeral, I know it was a combination of anger, fear, hurt, and helplessness. I didn't want to be angry at Jared. I didn't want to continue to watch him destroy himself and his relationships. I couldn't stop his behaviors. And some of my anger came from the fact that I couldn't fix it. Whether you are a parent or a youth worker, it really doesn't matter. There are times that our fears and our hurts can turn into anger. We have such love for the young people in our lives that we can find ourselves starting to teeter into that area of anger because we can't help them or because they don't want to help themselves. It took time in my relationship with God to allow me to let that hurt, to let that anger go away. And as I look back on this, I even believe that some of the anger I was experiencing was really at myself for not knowing how bad things were with Jared. Shortly after the funeral, Jared was evicted from his fraternity house. He was put on academic probation. When Jared came home for the winter break from college, he was more open than he had ever been to talking about what was going on with him. That's when we started to uncover how bad the depression was becoming. It felt like he finally realized that he needed help and was willing to take it. In the middle of this process, my husband and I were still praying that this was his rock bottom. Because to be honest, we were so weary from watching him do what he was doing to himself that we didn't know what else to do. At that point, I wanted to keep him home for a semester. My husband felt that he needed to have another chance. After a lot of talking and praying, we let him go back with the understanding that he had to either begin counseling or he could go to the doctor and talk about his depression. He chose to talk with his doctor and begin a low-dose antidepressant. I had a renewed sense of hope. So yeah. Let's talk about what happened that second semester you back at school in the dorms now.
Okay. So I was in the dorms with another one of my friends who also was Was it doing great academically? At the start of that semester, I think this was about a month or two that I had been on my medication. And I was really feeling good. And I remember those first 2-3 weeks that semester, I felt like I had gotten back to my old self. You know, I was doing really good in school. I was going to all my classes, you know, I was doing.
You were talking to us.
I was talking to you. Yeah. And I was, you know, I wasn't making the same stupid mistakes I had been. I don't think I was going out nearly as much. I was still going out every now and then, but I wasn't, you know, I was really at that point, I was starting to right the ship a little bit. And then I think I remember telling you after those 3 weeks, I said, I feel good now. I don't need to be on the medication anymore. I'm good now. And I think you and Dad were telling me, no, you probably should stay on those. And I said, no, I think I'm good. You pushed for it. But I think you could, there was no way you could have made me. And then again, I think the reason I went off those is because I did feel good. I did feel really good, but that was because I was on that medication. It was helping me with, I think, what was it? The
antidepressant.
The chemicals. It was adding more of the chemicals in my brain that I was lacking. Because when you have depression, everybody's depression is a little different because there's certain chemicals that everybody lacks in their brain. And so this medication, this antidepressant was putting more of that in my brain. I was starting to feel good. I think I was being a little more active. I think I was going to the gym every now and then. And then after those 3 weeks, I said, no, I don't need these anymore. And again, that's coming from a place where I didn't want to rely on that. I felt like I was, you know, I wasn't independent then if I was relying on this. So I'm going to do this on my own. Yeah, it was definitely prideful. Oh, all of this is just pride, thinking that I can do this myself and I don't need anybody else. That's the biggest issue of why I had these problems, because I wanted to do it, like I've said a million times already. I wanted to do it myself. And I was being very prideful. And I was at that point very conceited. I was very worried about myself, worried about how I looked, and wanted to give off this sort of impression to people. So after those 3 weeks, everything just went downhill, and it went downhill quick. You know,
Can I interrupt and say, we thought he was going to stay on him. Tom and I did. We thought we'd convinced him, you know, get through this semester. It's spring break. You can talk to the doctor. And Jared, in his overconfidence at that point, went cold turkey off those meds. And this is our stopping point today. Jared has chosen to go cold turkey off his low dose antidepressant without our knowledge. I am guessing that you figured out that Jared is still falling into his pit. Make sure you join us next time, where we will talk about what happened with Jared and how my husband and I had to try to help him find his rock bottom. Hey there, fellow youth workers. Thanks for tuning in today. Remember what Matthew 9:37 tells us. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. In other words, keep showing up and keep caring.